This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth. Building wealth and protecting legacy since 2004. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Hey, Darby. You know, I remember going to Omaha many, many times and listening to Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger talking about when someone really knows their stuff, then they can let the rest of us also understand it. And that's exactly what you do. Thank you, Darby. It was a phenomenal chat. Thank you. But now I think the other question that we have here is, why? Why are these guys stuck in the 1920s? Why are people like you not able to break through that logjam to, because everything you told us today is very, it's very logical. Why do we have a political elite that is being so illogical?
You know, I've studied communism. Does this thing work? Is it fine? I've studied communism. It's really an amazing ideology. It's really an amazing ideology. And Karl Marx was a very clever guy. He didn't work much, but he was a very clever guy. He and Engels basically funded him. And reading through his stuff, it's not easy, and trying to understand it is very complicated and so on. But the message that he keeps on sending out is that watch out, don't exploit people, don't treat people badly. And I think that had a specific ring to the ANC, given South Africa's history and all of that. And then, of course, the thing has got a solid theoretical base. And they were a politics of that time. The result of that was that the ANC came under the control, under the influence of those guys. There's one major problem, just by the way, with communism, and that is the allocation process. In a free market system, the allocation process is determined by supply and demand. And you can see supply and demand because you can see prices keep on changing. That's why price level or inflation must be low, because if inflation is high, you can't see the signals. So we allocate resources continuously based on changes in prices. And the Soviet Union, they couldn't allocate resources properly because they fixed the prices. And the reason for why the Soviet Union collapsed was because of a misallocation of resources. It was on economic reasons. But trying to answer your question, I think it has to do with this bleeding heart thing about we have to help people. We have to make sure that that labor is not exploited. We make sure that bad capitalists do not do the bad things that they keep on doing. I think that's part of the reason. I don't think they because they are bad. I don't think communists are bad. I think they don't understand economics, but they're not necessarily bad people, because I think all economists want people to be better off. I want people to be better off. But the way that I look at it, and I disagree with the way that the ANC, so I guess I didn't answer that, and I don't think what the real answer is.
But you're clearly a student of history, and I want to share with you something that I heard Neil Ferguson, who's a wonderful historian, saying in Davos. He said that if he lived in a country with a highly turbulent political system, he would have a high percentage of his assets invested in crypto. Now, I know Magnus is sitting there, man. But what... what's your thought about that?
Yeah, okay. When you talk about crypto, there are two things that are important, and people don't quite often confuse the two. The first one is the platform or the technology, which is the blockchain technology, which is amazing technology. That is really, really amazing technology, because essentially what it is, it's a platform where you can share information securely. So if you get information, and it can be any information about the money, or it can be information about the ownership of property or whatever the case may be. So that's good technology. That's technology. It's going to be with us. It's going to change. And it is changing the world. The second one is the question about money, and that's Bitcoin on top of that. Now, here's an interesting one. Where did money come from? If you ask people that understand money, and I'm still battling to understand money, it's actually a very, it's a social construct in a way. I mean, we think of money as pieces of gold, of pieces of paper, or electronic money, or whatever, but actually it's an idea. It's nothing but an idea. And let me tell you why I say so. If you ask people where money came from, why was money invented, they're probably going to tell you to make trade easier. And certainly it does. But that's not the real origin of money. The real origin of money is that it represents credit. credit, actually. Now, think a little bit about that. Credit is nothing but an idea. So, and there's a lot of proof of that. In the past, though, you owe me 10 sheep, and I take a piece of wood, for example, make 10 sort of scratches on that, and that's 10 sheep. And next time around, how many? Oh, yeah, 10. Yeah, yeah. Correct. So that is my proof that you owe me 10 sheep, for example. And that eventually started trading the piece of wood, and that eventually evolved into money. But it started off as an idea. And that is what Bitcoin is. It's an idea. And now it starts making a little bit more sense. Don't look at it in terms of value of something. Of course, we had gold money, for example, and that had some intrinsic value to that. People accept the gold. But it's more of an idea. And I think that is what the new currency is. So the definition of money is anything that's generally accepted as money is money. And when it becomes accepted as money, then it is money. And I think that's behind the idea of Bitcoin, why it becomes valid. Should we invest in Bitcoin? That's a completely different question. I don't know what the answer is in that. But try to see Bitcoin as an idea and not necessarily as money, because money is basically a social construct.
You touched on the issues that Big Brother could be having with us. But I want to pick up on something else that Markner spoke about, which was gold. And gold does seem to be getting, even the Bitcoin guys, as I mentioned earlier, are calling it natural Bitcoin. So do you think gold should be a bigger part in one's portfolio now?
The barbaric relic. Well, let's go perhaps through some of the reasons. Magnus mentioned some of the reasons. Yes, central banks are buying a lot of gold. But what has been happening recently, the dollar itself has been coming under some pressure. And remember, many assets, especially gold, sort of try to look into the future, anticipating what's going to happen to, say, the price of the dollar. And I think many people will accept that, in fact, that the dollar is probably going to, and I think also that the dollar is probably going to lose some value. Also keep in mind that currently the Russians are being cut off from the SWIFT system. Not all of them. One or two banks are still on SWIFT, but they're being cut off from the SWIFT system. And the Russians actually use gold as a payment system as well, between the Russians and the Chinese. There are no official numbers for that, but that's what people say. Should you invest in? I don't like gold. And the reason why I don't, there are four reasons why you do buy gold. You buy gold if you expect high levels of US inflation. You buy gold if you want to jump on a plane and flee. You buy gold if you've got some emotional reason for, and you buy gold if you want to seduce women. Those are the four reasons where you buy gold. But a gold doesn't give you any return. So no, fundamentally, I do not like gold. But I have to admit, gold price increased quite nicely recently. That's probably because of expectations on the dollars and some of these other reasons that I've mentioned.
Well, some compelling reasons there that you, particularly the last one. We're heading for a financial crisis in South Africa or the world?
I think let's try the world one first. We have seen the Magnificent Seven, this massive increase in their prices recently. I think we haven't. About technology, two things about technology. Technology, the hype about technology and how it's going to change our world is always overdone in the short term. Everybody's telling us this is going to change the world tomorrow. It never does. It always takes longer for technology to take hold properly. But when it does, the impact is usually much bigger than what we thought initially. And I think the same is going to happen to artificial intelligence. So I think we're going to see a significant correction somewhere, but thereafter we're going to see much more. And in various fields, I did mention the four industries that I particularly like, especially in medicine, things like genetic engineering with artificial intelligence that will open the world. Imagine in chemistry, how many different chemical whatever stuff that we will discover and how we can improve on batteries only. So I think the world is, we are heading for, like I've said, abundance of just about everything. The scarce things are going to be special skills. So yes, I think there's going to be a correction, but this is only the beginning of really great things that's going to come.
But how do you personally, tell us about how you personally are preparing for all of this? You're a South African, you live in South Africa.
Okay. People ask me, and this is an important question. This is, if you ask me this, you didn't listen to what I've been trying to say here. And that is that the world of the economy is happening in the cloud today. Remember a state, the essence of a state is that it monopolizes the institution called the state, it monopolizes violence. That's what they do. And violence is usually a physical kind of thing. So they can lock you up, or they can steal your stuff, and they can do things like that. But nowadays, economic activities are more in the cloud kind of stuff, and we even use money that's in the cloud. So they're losing control over you more and more so. And the world is becoming a libertarian world, the world that I like to live in. And I like it. I like it that way. So how do you prepare for that? And it's like I said, people ask me, should I leave? Should I emigrate? And I say, South Africa is a dangerous place. Don't make a mistake. So be safe. Make sure that you've got all the necessary things. But apart from that, we've got, not the Cape, but the rest of the country, we've got amazing weather. And amazing weather. We've got lack of wijn. We've got lack of braai vleis and brandy and all these amazing stuff. So if you have the necessary skills and you have the proper computer and a good internet connection, it doesn't matter where you are. Then you can be in South Africa. You can hedge yourself against the threat of the state by just making sure you're physically safe and do these other things. That's the question. Make sure your kids, and remember, education in the future. We've got this misconception. We've got this wrong idea about education. We put all this emphasis on qualifications, but we've forgotten about skills. We have to rename it. We call it skills development, not qualification. We produce 600,000 matrics every year with a qualification that means nothing. So qualifications, skills in future mean continuous learning all the time. And then you can be anywhere. I've got a friend. He works for a bank in Kenya for a couple of years now. He's never even been to Kenya. That's the future. That's the future of the economy.
Again, Max's question we kick off with, should our focus be to decouple the economy from the state rather than fix state institutions?
There are certain, depending on your ideological beliefs, the primary function of the state, and I think there is a role for the state, is to protect me and my stuff. I am the most important person in this country. The reason why the state exists is to protect me and to protect my stuff. That is the primary function of the state. Then, depending on your ideological beliefs, you can go a little bit further, but they also have to provide maybe health services, maybe from infrastructure, maybe electricity. So it depends. Personally, what I believe is that the state must concentrate on what they're supposed to be doing, and for the rest, the private sector can do that. But that's not really relevant, the question there, because it's not for us to answer whether we should fix the state-owned enterprises, for example. The ANC has answered that already, and they've decided to destroy it. So they have been destroyed, and we are taking it over. We are privatizing Eskom. The post office has been privatized. It's called, what do you call it, PostNet or whatever, and all these sort of things. So it has been privatized. So I think this is actually a very nice opportunity for us to really establish a more freer economy in South Africa by getting rid of all these parasites.
I'm sure you appreciated what Andre was saying about the flywheel. I mean, the Jim Collins flywheel. But if this government continues to try and get that flywheel started again, even though all they're doing is breaking it, how does one respond if you're in the private sector?
No, the private sector is coming to the party. Like, I mean, how many, Transnet just announced a couple of private sector guys that's going to participate, getting railroads over. In the case of electricity, we're just taking it over. I've got the solar panels. I'm thinking of switching off completely. And this is maybe a slightly different. So we accumulated all this debt, which is supposed to be backed by capital, but the capital has been eroded. So that's the problem. You can't go on a fire sale and sell the assets and pay off the debt, which then means that we're probably going to have an inflation problem going forward, just by the way. Because inflation erodes the value of money, but inflation erodes the value of debt as well. And I think, and that's also what I think is going to happen globally with the high debt levels of the Americans and Europeans and all of that. So I've got a suspicion that we'll have this persistent, every now and again, you will get this inflationary issues globally. So I'm coming back to South Africa, that I really think this is in a weird kind of way the ANC did us a favor by actually privatizing all these state-owned enterprises.
Yeah, and I suppose that's another bull point for Bitcoin and gold if you look in the longer term. Rob Hersoff's question, Your estimate of rand dollar exchange rate in 25 and 26.
Okay, let's just look at the rand. And I do the calculations on the rand in a certain way, and I'll share that with you. There's something called, as we all know, the Big Mac Index. So that's so-called purchasing power parity. So what I do, I take a big basket in the International Monetary Fund. They've got a big basket of goodies. You take that and you compare the prices of that to South Africa and you calculate how much the rand is undervalued. And the rand is always undervalued. So you can, and you all know this. If you go to the United States and you buy a Coke, it's much more expensive there, or a hamburger or whatever. And that margin is between 40 and 60%, depending where you are, roughly. So that is sort of the baseline. So that is, and then I see how much the rand is undervalued. It's always undervalued. And then I calculate how much the rand is undervalued from away from this baseline. And it's always, like I've said, about 40-50% or so away from that. And that is then my fair value of the currency. And currently the rand is weak, but it's a little bit weaker than what it's supposed to be based on the historic trends and based on the purchasing power parity. And the rand should be trading at about 17 or just below 17 or so to the US. So the starting point is the rand is already weak. Now that's important. If you accept that, the starting point is rand is already weak, then it means if nothing happens, the rand is likely to drift better. And I can see that. So whenever there's calm, there's not much happening, there's no whatever happening, the threat of DA withdrawing from the GNU or somebody stealing or whatever, or threat of Donald Trump or whatever. When nothing major happens, then the rand tend to drift a little bit better. And there's a crisis, then the rand bombs out again. And just by the way, the biggest effect on exchange rate recently was not because of economic developments or political developments. The possibility of the GNU coming to an end had a big impact on the exchange rate of the currency. And I'm just giving that for background. And also, if Rob asked about the dollar, rand exchange rate, keep in mind the dollar itself is a currency that's coming under pressure. So trying to answer that, a good rule of thumb is to work with about 5% every year, rand depreciate against the dollar, for example, which then will bring us to, what's it, how many years away? Roughly to
25 and 26, end of this
month. This year, I won't be surprised if we see the rand below 17-ish or whatever, unless there's some sort of crisis. Then the rand can go. If Donald Trump decides to implement some sort of financial sanctions in South Africa, then we're talking about 19, 20, whatever. The rand can really bomb out badly. But then if nothing happens, then it's probably going to drift back again. So I think the rand is, I'm not too concerned about the exchange rate of the currency at the moment. Maybe just another comment about the exchange rate. It is true the rand is weak and it's weaker than usual and it's not a good thing. But more importantly, it's not the price of anything, but it's the change in the price that matters. So interest rates is at a certain level, you eventually get accustomed to that. But then if interest rates change, whatever, that's got an impact on the economy. The change in things is more important than the actual level.
Gregory Giannopoulos wants to know your thoughts on South America and or I think specifically Argentina.
Oh, I love Xavier. I love him. And yet, I think it was at the beginning of this year at World Economic Forum, he had a speech. That's probably the best speech that I've listened to for many, many years. Go and listen to that. Xavier, he's just, I mean, this guy walks on water. I think he's just absolutely amazing. I'm very optimistic. This goes to show, there was a saying, as you all know, 100 years ago, as wealthy as an Argentinian, and see where they are today. And it's because of socialists. It's because the Peronists were a bunch of socialists. And, of course, the military. Maybe on the military, I can just make a comment, if I may. So we all were happy about this general, Mkhwanazi, what's his name, that made this comment about political stuff that and the police and so on. I'm very concerned about that because, of course, it's a good thing that he pointed that out, but it's very dangerous when military leaders start pointing out stuff like this. So I'm concerned. We've got a very unstable political environment. And one day, a military leader, general is going to stand up and say, listen, we can't trust the politicians. We've got a coup. We have to take over, blah, blah, blah. I don't like that. I'm worried.
Interesting point. The same one that Paul O'Sullivan made, and he was widely criticized when he did so. But perhaps the sense there is now permeating. Dr. Anthea Jeffries is from Corin. Mentioned during her speech at a previous BizNews conference that the ANC is in actual fact right on target in terms of their communism handbook, to break everything down to ground level. So knowing that, well, I guess it's the National Democratic Revolution she spoke about, it wouldn't help to criticize them by pointing the destruction out to them as negative, as a negative, because they see it as positive. Are we missing each other? Is there another approach, maybe?
I've got the world. I mean, I think she's just amazing. She should have been our Chief Justice. I mean, she's just amazing. I think she's really wonderful. But on this one, I disagree with her. I don't think the ANC has got this National Democratic Revolution thing that they want to achieve or whatever. I think they can't organize anything. I mean, they don't have a plan for anything. So I don't think so. They are just incompetent and corrupt and useless and destructive and all that. There's no plan.
So the two words are piss up and brewery. John Endres from the IRR, Anthea's colleague, says, has he read Superabundance by Pooley and Tupi? It confirms his comment about prices coming down empirically.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Part of it. So yeah, this is the beginning. I think if you adjust the price, this is just something that came up just now. The past 10 years, the 85-inch TV expressed in labor time, how much you have to pay in order, how long you have to work to buy an 85-inch flat screen TV. Prices came down 98% TV prices.
Wow.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. And he's got a follow-up question. Elon Musk speculated at the release of Grok 4 that global GDP could increase 100,000-fold through AI and other technological productivity advances. What would the world look like with a GDP that's around 100,000 times its current value?
Yeah. Amazing abundance. I did something a little while ago. I was asked, I belong to all sort of funny organizations. It's like, if you know Pinky and the Brain, we stuff like that. We get together and we plan how we're going to take over the world. And a bunch of economists asked me to do a paper about money, the future of money. And it would have taken me a few months actually to prepare this paper. And a friend of mine is an artificial intelligence expert, and we fed all the stuff that I've written before to the model. So to get my style of writing, I told them this is the source information. I gave it to the model, and I told the model this is the outcome I want. And I pressed the button, and within a day, I did the whole thing. And I read through it a couple of thousands of words. I read through it. I took one word out.
Wow.
One word I took out. So is that my work? That is, I mean, I did something literally in less than a day that it would have taken me many weeks or maybe months even.
So it's mind-blowing, really. Rob Hersoff's got four questions for you. Debt is above 75% of GDP. What must be cut first? Public wages, social grants, or infrastructure to avoid a fiscal collapse?
No, Rob, you can't cut spending. There are a couple of things. Of course, we can't cut spending. You can do that. The biggest expense item is on education. And we can't cut on education. What we need to do on education is to improve the quality of education. That's it. In fact, in education, I will close half the universities and will spend all the money in primary education, mostly, or most of that. But you have to improve the quality. You cannot cut money on the wage, on the various grants. But, I mean, you can't do that because we've got a responsibility of fellow South Africans. Where you can cut, perhaps, and we've got that rats and mice, we can cut that in the cabinet and so on, but that's not where the big money goes to. But try to sell some of what's left of some of the assets, Transnet and so on, and use the money to pay off the debt and reduce the interest component. So that is perhaps. But the only answer remains economic growth, really. That's all that we can do.
You predicted a bond market crisis within 5 years. What exact trigger event would set it off?
Donald Trump is a very good example. When you have debt levels this high, you are very, very vulnerable to whatever. And Donald Trump is something, and it could be something else. Something that comes from the East. It could be a conflict between China and America means that everybody's going to run away to the American bond market and sell our stuff. So it's maybe nothing to do with South Africa, but if you're vulnerable in high levels of debt and a very liquid market, then you're a sitter.
It's quite funny how little people are aware of the strategic importance of Taiwan, and in particular TSMC. And if a Chinese invasion were to go ahead there?
Yeah. And the question, this is a political one. What is Donald Trump going to do? Is he going to defend the Taiwan or not? And in fact, I think the Chinese, I think they've got the upper hand here. Because what they're doing, they're gradually strangling. They're just simply cutting Taiwan off slowly. I think they're going to win this war.
Sure. Should Eskom and Transnet be fully privatized, partially sold, or kept under state control with strict performance contracts?
It's a question about the natural monopoly. There are some institutions and some companies that, for example, it's all good. You can argue and say, "Let's the private sector needs to build a highway," but you know, private sector can build a highway, but then it's a monopoly because it doesn't make sense to build another highway right next to it. So the answer to that is, and I'm very much a libertarian, I believe that private sector should be doing most of these sort of things. I think what can and should be done, maybe the state can own many of these assets, but you can concession it out, get private sector to run it. I think Eskom is a good example. Transnet is a brilliant example of that. So yes, the ownership can lie with the state, but the running of that must be with the private sector.
Pete Schroeder's got a very personal question. He says, after your home invasion, you stated that the turn to action happens when the risk of no action exceeds the risk of action. Is there such a point in South Africa and its economy?
Okay, if I can get personal. I can tell you the worst thing that ever happened to me, the worst thing that can happen to a man is that if you're in a position where your family is threatened and you can't do anything about that. I mean, there's nothing as bad as that. And when you get there, you will do something. And that's what happened to me, and I believe we will do that as well in South Africa. And I think that's where we are. We are there now. We have to do something because this country is going down the tubes. We've got to stop this. We've got to stop the ANC.
What is that something?
We'll vote them out. And that's the only thing that we can really do. And that's one of the institutions. And that's why I don't think we're going to have an Arab Spring, because we have a functioning democracy. And that is perhaps the strongest institution that we have in the end. I can point out to the independence of the judiciary and the independence of the press and that sort of stuff. But in the end, it's in our hands. It's our responsibility. And that's the only institution that we have to jealously guard. And that's a real functioning democracy. Because that's the only thing that can save us going forward.
JV Faree says, Davi, is there still space for a digital nomad laptop bearer in the Soaring Eagles?
We changed the name. Yes. No. Yeah. Everybody's welcome in the Soaring Eagles. That's our gang. Yeah. I believe, and you know what I think? That's actually an important question, is that I've got a sense that people are becoming... The swing in the pendulum, ideological swing, especially after Donald Trump. But with Malay and many other changes that's happening, people are finding their voices. Rob, for example, Andre, for example, Hendrik, people are making they're standing up for what is right. So I've got a sense that it's not only in South Africa but globally, you get this swing and then people are finding their voices.
And perhaps Hendrik and Andre won't take quite as many hits as Rob took when he stood up at that BizNews conference nearly 4 years ago, when he was such an outlier. It's almost like others of their ilk are becoming, I won't say braver, but they are certainly becoming more in the spotlight.
Yeah, it's not only them. I think the normal people out there also. I think we are understanding that we are important, and I think we are understanding that we are powerful, all of us. So it's not only them, but of course you need leaders.
Yeah, well, the NGOs have been playing that game for a long time, and thank you, Davi Root, for giving us the courage to also, each one of us, make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's leading boutique wealth manager. Trusted to guide families for over 20 years. Invest better with Brenthurst.